My first question is, why has the Council of Europe Commissioner for Human Rights visited Armenia? I mean, is this a part of routine visits in the member states, or are there some specific worries which relate to Armenia?
No, this was a regular visit. I must visit all 47 member states of the Council of Europe, and it was Armenia's turn. Uh-huh. And now when I go, I identify usually two or three issues that I want to look at, and I look at them in depth. So there was no specific, special, urgent reason for my visit. It was part of my regular program of visits.
Okay. Which are the main findings of your visit?
Well, we focused on two issues, the administration of justice and gender equality and women's rights. With regard to the administration of justice, I found that a lot still needs to be done to reinforce the independence of the judiciary, mm-hmm. both from the president, whose role is too large in the appointment, promotion, and dismissal of judges, but also the independence of individual judges from pressure from higher-ranking judges, but also from the prosecutorial authorities. Uh-huh. In Armenia, like in many post-Soviet countries, there's a very heavy prosecutorial bias, and the prosecutors are still very dominant in the system. So what needs to be done is defense rights and equality of arms needs to be strengthened, access to legal aid, access of the defense to information about a case, and treatment by the judges of the defense as an equal partner in this system.
But these issues are pretty much widespread among post-Soviet countries, these problems.
Yes, this prosecutorial bias is very prominent in many other countries I've looked at. It's prominent in, I've done reports on the judiciary also in Moldova and in Russia. You can find something very similar in those countries as well.
Prosecutorial bias, you mean that prosecutors are under political influence?
Not necessarily, just that the prosecutors usually get their way. You have a very low acquittal rate, 3% in Armenia. And their links with judges are often very strong. It's uh-huh. very often former prosecutors have become judges, uh-huh. And that the defense is quite weak in this system. Uh-huh. So this is what I mean. Not necessarily that it's politicized, uh-huh. although there are problems of selective or politicized justice as well in Armenia, as there are in many countries.
I read media a statement that you gave to the media this morning, and it's concerning the dramatic issue of gender inequality in Armenia, and moreover the issue of widespread violence against women in Armenian society. How far is the extent of this phenomenon, and how do you think these matters should be addressed?
Well, the issue caught my attention in a number of different ways. First, when I was in Armenia a little over a year ago, there had been a number of attacks and threats against women's rights NGOs and activists, and this caught my attention. The second thing that caught my attention was some figures I came across about prenatal sex selection.
Yes.
That you have a huge imbalance in Armenia. This is in the Caucasus, in the South Caucasus, in the North Caucasus, and in the Western Balkans in particular, where you have many, many more boys being born than girls, which suggests that parents are aborting female fetuses before they are born, which suggests in turn that girls and boys are not considered to be equal. And this is reflected also in lower participation of women in public and political life, but it's also reflected in the extent of domestic violence. Now, the figures I came across varied hugely in terms of the extent of domestic violence, but what's clear is that the response until now has not been adequate. You've had political rhetoric that sometimes justifies domestic violence. You have police which have not been sufficiently trained and sometimes victimize women a second time. You have only one shelter which is specifically devoted two women victims of domestic violence with four
only
beds.
Only one safe house in the whole of Armenia.
Exactly. And this is woefully inadequate. And this is why I urged the authorities to give a clear political signal that violence against women is unacceptable and will not be tolerated, that those who engage in it will be prosecuted. And I urge the authorities also to support the NGOs working in this field, but also to fund more shelters, but also to train the police to adopt a specific law on gender-based violence, but also to ratify the Council of Europe Convention against Violence Against Women, because this is the premier document, international document in the field, and they could learn a lot by being part of that process, getting expert opinion and evaluation and monitoring, and participating and sharing best practices with other countries.
And what about this skewed sex ratio between boys and girls at birth? How can this phenomenon be addressed? I mean, just through education, I guess. And
part of it is addressing the root causes to basically stress to people that girls and boys are equal in value, and this is a long-term educational and awareness-raising process. The second part, of course, is to get health professionals involved and to urge them not to reveal the sex of the child in the first trimester of a pregnancy. It's not necessary information in the first trimester of the pregnancy, but also to get the ombudsman and other human rights officials involved in these discussions, actively urging people to think twice before they try to select the sex of their baby. This is a long-term problem, but if it's not addressed, it can lead to a very skewed sex ratios in society. I was very struck that I heard in one region of Armenia, the ratio was 124 to 100. This is a huge, huge disparity, and if this is not addressed, it can lead to huge social problems in the future, where you have very few women and very many men. I think you need an open public debate about it, but you also need to do everything possible to raise the value of girls and women in society, and this is a broader and more long-term challenge.
Mm-hmm. Changing subject, you highlight reports of ill treatment by law enforcement officials in Armenia. Are we talking about torture, or what is the extent of this phenomenon? Especially related to the 2008, aftermath.
You have these killings from 2008, the deaths which have not yet led to justice for the perpetrators, and the victims are not yet satisfied with the results of the investigations 7 years after the fact. But you have persistent reports of ill treatment in detention by the police. These have been documented by the Committee on the Prevention of Torture in its visits in 2010 and 2013. I also received a number of reports in this regard, and it's clear that much more needs to be done. First of all, to reduce reliance on confessions and other evidence received under or obtained under duress by the police and by investigators, but also access to a lawyer informing the family, access to medical care from the very beginning needs to be guaranteed within places of detention. And that more training and awareness raising of police needs to take place, and the prosecutor has to go after those the bad apples who are engaging in ill treatment against people in detention.
Then one last question: how much is the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh affecting the state of human rights overall in Armenia?
I think it affects the situation. I mean, any situation of conflict in which people are killed on a weekly, if not daily, basis affects a number of different human rights. And in situations of conflict, it's very often human rights are sacrificed on the altar of national security. But that said, I was pleased with some of the changes I've seen in our media recently. the acceptance of conscientious objection and kind of the development of alternative service. That's a real step forward, and I'm very glad.
So this is a fact now, the possibility to access conscientious objection for Armenian youth.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And I'm very pleased that nobody is being detained or serving prison time anymore because of their beliefs, and they're able to do alternative service, and that the service is truly civilian and not linked to the military. So I am very pleased with the progress on that front. I understand that the number of non-combat deaths has decreased, but there's still a lack of trust between the victims' families and the authorities, NGOs compiling statistics and the authorities and their statistics, and that more dialogue and cooperation there is needed to overcome this lack of trust. But I do see some movement forward there as well.
But the family of victims of off-duty incidents in the army, have those episodes been addressed properly or not?
Well, some of them have been addressed, others have not. See, this is a problem, is that NGOs sometimes use different categories to classify the deaths. Even if you've had prosecutions, for example, there was one case that we document in the report where a number of people were prosecuted and given 3 to 4 years in prison, but the family was dissatisfied with the judgment because they thought that it was not incitement to suicide or bringing the person to suicide, but actually a murder. So more dialogue between the prosecutorial authorities and the victims' families and NGOs needs to take place to build trust, I think, which is lacking. But there is progress there, and I think the authorities take this very seriously. And I was pleased to hear the seriousness of the approach of the Ministry of Defense to this, and the multi-pronged approach they took, not only focusing on investigations and prosecutions, but also on education awareness raising and how it is that those who are doing military service, where they are actually sent to do their service.
Uh-huh. As we are, as a media, we cover all the Caucasus region. Is there a pattern of problems which you believe are common to all, talking about the three countries of the South Caucasus region? Is there a pattern of similar problems, or are you finding significant differences concerning human rights between the situation in Armenia, in Azerbaijan, and Georgia?
Well, I think if you look at my work on Georgia and Azerbaijan, you will see that there are certain issues which are similar. For example, the issue of the independence and impartiality of the judiciary is something I've looked at in all three countries. So this is a kind of a common strain. I think it's most serious, if I were to say so, in Azerbaijan, where all of the major partners of my office, the human rights defenders, have been jailed and prosecuted in recent times by on charges that, to be honest, defy credibility. So I think Azerbaijan is a specific case, but the problem of the independence of the judiciary and the impartiality is a broader one for the entire region. The issue of ill treatment in detention is also a common issue. It was a huge problem in Georgia, as I'm sure you know, in prison.
The situation of prisons overall.
Yeah, the situation of prisons and places of detention is pretty dire. I think actually the detention facility that I visited in Azerbaijan was actually not so bad. It's a question of who is in detention rather than the conditions of detention, which was occupied me more in Azerbaijan. With regard to gender equality, I think that this is an issue in all three countries, but I would say it could be. You might have less awareness of it in Azerbaijan and Armenia than you do in Georgia. You have, for example, the failure to ratify the Convention on Violence Against Women. Azerbaijan is in this position, and Armenia, I'm hoping, will move towards ratification. I think that the issue of violence against women is a common one in all three countries. The issue of prenatal sex selection is common in all three countries. So many, many common issues of concern, although the situation in Azerbaijan, I think, is a bit specific because of the crackdown on human rights defenders more broadly that has taken place in the last few months.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you want to add?
I think we covered it very well. Okay. I just want to say that I was very pleased with the tone and intensity of the dialogue I had with the Armenian authorities. I was received at a very high level. I hope to continue this dialogue. For me, the report is just the beginning of the process, and I hope to continue meeting with parliamentarians and with government officials and with civil society to push these issues forward and to hope to see real progress on the ground.